Good evening and welcome to Losses Above Replacement, the greatest baseball podcast to grace your ears. I'm today's host, Matthias Alton Kurosaki, and with me, as always, we have my amazing co-hosts, Ryan Splash Potts and Alex Clark. Gentlemen, first things first, as we begin every show, how are we doing on this fine Monday evening?
I mean, right now, we're recording this right after the Texas Rangers took Game 3 over the Arizona Diamondbacks, and the result was not what I would have liked, but it's okay. Dory, it's just a little bit outside. Shout out to Moreno. But anyway, I think I'm having a good time so far. Like, tomorrow, or when this episode's going up, it will be Halloween, so happy Halloween to all of our listeners. I hope you guys are all having a fun time. Hope you're all getting and lots of candy or partaking in however you like to celebrate.
What's good, guys? So rapid fire. First off, the Phillies are ball lickers. Second, how do you have a player named Michael Meyer on your team and you don't feed him a touchdown the day before Halloween? And three, go Ravens.
You know, you mentioned Halloween. So I guess today, when this goes up, is actually my parents' anniversary. 41 oh, wow. years. So, yeah, happy anniversary to them. They are currently on the other side of the world. I called them already, but they are in Japan right now. So I've been looking after the cats. It's kind of exhausting, I won't lie, taking care of them. But it is what it is. They haven't destroyed our apartment entirely. So I guess that's a positive. I've had a lot of fun watching the playoffs, though. I think the World Series has been pretty entertaining. I feel like it's weird. This is one where I feel like I don't have a real rooting interest necessarily. I feel like, you know, I sort of have a team I want to win, but, you know, it's not like I'm going to lose sleep over whoever wins this World Series. So it's weird not having an NL East team in the World Series right now. I'll say that much. But anyways, speaking of the World Series, let's get right into that. As Alex said, we are recording this after Game 3. The Rangers are now up 2-1. First game, I mean, that was one of the best World Series games I've watched. I am quite glad I stayed up to the end of that. For context, I had to be up before 5 a.m. on Saturday morning for an inter-squad competition, and I stayed up through the end of the game. I'll be honest, when Garcia came up, I was really thinking, man, like, I have time for like one more half inning and then I should probably go to bed. And then hit the home run, whatever. I went to bed. Game 2 was a bit of a blowout and game 3 was a tightly contested game. So guys, what are some of your big takeaways from these first three games? What stood out to you?
The big thing that comes out to me overall with this is the fact that I feel more and more right about how the Diamondbacks play baseball after watching these three games. They are very good at playing from behind, and they're very good about once they get rolling, it is very hard to stop them, and their clutch hitting has been fantastic over this series, as well as it's been throughout the entire playoffs so far. I will say this, though, and you can quote me on saying this. If the Rangers win this postseason, it's all going to come back to that game one. It's all going to come back to where the Diamondbacks had the lead 5-3 in the ninth inning and blew it. Paul Sewell, the first time since 2021 that he has given up a run in the postseason and gives up a 2-run home run to Corey Seager. And it all just kind of fell apart from there. So at that point, that's where if Texas wins this series, that's where it's all going to boil back down to. And because at that point, if that result is reversed, then you have going into today's game, the Diamondbacks leading 2-0. That would be 2-1 after today's matchup. Well, yesterday's matchup for when this is going live. But at the same time, I will also say that if Arizona wins it overall, still, they're going to be one of the most scrappiest winners that we've seen in recent history, especially considering, which isn't too hard to say. Considering that most of the time it's been the Houston Astros winning. Although I will say number one scrappiest team to win is still the Nationals. So, at least in recent memory.
Yeah, this has been an odd series. First off, shout out to Austin Hedges for one of the worst at-bats I've ever seen. It was like April Marcell Ozuna. Just three sliders 10 feet off the plate, and he swings through all three of them.
I was ready for him to hit a walk-off, honestly.
Oh, absolutely. That was definitely going to happen, but El Bombi, like, saved us from, like, an even greater orgasm there. But the Diamondbacks play this weird brand of baseball, and I'm going to explain it the best way I think I can, and that's with a football analogy. This is like the 2007 Giants, that the sacrifice hitting, like the bunts that Perdomo lays down, they have eight sacrifices in the playoffs. The sacrifice, the quote-unquote small ball, is like Eli Manning. The home run power of the offense is like the defense. So you look at it and you say, oh, Eli Manning, Super Bowl MVP. He scored 17 points. Like, yes, technically, he was good in that game, and they won the Super Bowl, and he helped. But I think it's a case of you still need hitting production. And I can appreciate the strategy involved. I can appreciate the physical ability to lay down bunts, because, believe it or not, professional baseball players don't do that as often as you might think, or as well as you might
especially
think.
In the no DH era.
Yes. Oh, yeah. So yeah, props to Perdomo. He has 26 sacrifices over the last two seasons. Props to this Diamondbacks team, but you still have to hit the baseball, right? You still have to get men on base. Mm-hmm. You still have to have some extra base power. You still have to hit some home runs. And even in game one, the joke was, oh, well, the Diamondbacks were small ball scoring runs. Well, before Seager hit a home run, guess who had more home runs in that game? Arizona. So if you out-homer your opponent, you generally win in the playoffs. We've known this. I believe the last team to win the World Series who did not out-homer the opponent was the 2015 Royals, and they had one of the greatest bullpens in the history of the sport. So you get a once-in-a-generation bullpen, and you win the World Series without out-homering your opponent. Congratulations. What we saw today, Texas, it's the only home run of the game. Corey Seager, two-run shot off Brandon Pfaadt, who I thought Pfaadt was excellent today, but Corey Seager, only home run of the game, Texas wins. And it's not as simple to say, oh, whoever has more power entering the series wins the series, but the small ball stuff, I think, gets a little overblown. You are playing to get one extra run here or there. There's situations that's perfectly fine. You know, bottom of the ninth, you need to tie the game. Absolutely. Let Corbin Carroll bat with a man on second and one out instead of Geraldo Perdomo. Okay, fine. I can understand that, or get it down to the middle of your order. But I do think people kind of take the small ball stuff and run with it a little too much, because Arizona's in this spot. And that's oversimplifying when you've had Merrill Kelly balled out in game two. Brandon Pfaadt has been very good since his wild card blow up. The bullpen has been very good. The complimentary hitting, like Ketel Marte is on a historic hitting streak. Tommy Pham is going off. Corbin Carroll's doing stuff. And I think when you're saying small ball this, small ball that, you are like trying to throw it all on the team when there's individual players balling out here.
Yeah, I mean, what we're seeing here, because home runs, I think it's obviously really important that you have power hitters on your team. Hitting home runs gives you a much better chance of winning the game. That goes without saying, but it's also that the Rangers are hitting them with men on base, and that's the difference between them and the Phillies. You know, you see mm-hmm. the Phillies are not in the World Series, which I'm dead wrong about it. I'll say it. I was right about it.
Yeah,
okay.
So Alex, my wallet is angry.
But I thought the D-backs were dead after game two. But you look back at it, and really, the Phillies, like all but three of the home runs they hit in the postseason were solo home runs. And I mean, solo home runs, I mean, yes, they go over the fence, they give you an automatic run, but at the same time, I mean, you can hit all the solo home runs you want. If the other team executes with men on base, you know, gets those two-run, three-run hits, then you're going to lose. And the Rangers have gotten two-run home runs from Corey Seager, and they've, you know, effectively decided the games. I mean, that here's the thing: that home run in Game One, Seawald executed. He elevated his fastball to the target, but Seager was sitting on dead red on a piece of cheese up in the zone, and he destroyed it. So You know, it's hard to fault Seawald for that. I mean, credit to him for getting out of that inning. Adolis Garcia has been fantastic all postseason, really.
Adolis Garcia has been single-handedly probably one of the most impactful bats in recent postseason history.
He has the most RBI.
RBI record for a playoff run.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I know, yeah. He and, of course, he passes David Freese, who, as Rangers fans know, he kind of popped off that postseason. And of course, he broke the record on the anniversary of Game 6 of the 2011 World Series. With a walk-off jack mm-hmm. in the 11th inning. That was awesome, really. That game as a whole was. But, you know, the Rangers' bullpen, I have been downing them, I feel like, all year. I really did not think they were that good. But other than Game 2, they've actually been really good. And again, today, with Max Scherzer leaving after three innings, the bullpen, I mean, one run over six innings. John Gray was fantastic, although now who knows who's going to start Game 4. Jose Leclerc again. I know he got a little help from the home plate umpire, but still,
a little bit of help, yes.
But like, he's been largely, he has not given up a run to anyone not named Jose Altuve this postseason. So he's been really good, actually. Here's the tough part for the Rangers now, is that Adolis Garcia had to leave tonight's game mm-hmm. in the eighth inning. They described as left side tightness. He's going to get an MRI. Max Scherzer, like I mentioned earlier, he left the game early with back tightness. He says it's just back spasms, but who knows if he's going to be back. So considering that the Rangers might be down two significant players, how much do you guys think that alters their chances at hanging on to this series lead? Because I think the D-backs definitely have players where they can take advantage of the Rangers while they're sort of reeling a little bit.
That's kind of exactly what I'm thinking right now, is that I think that right now when it comes to the Rangers, or excuse me, when it comes to the Diamondbacks, this is a time that they have to capitalize. And that's not even so much they have the advantage. No, it's they have the advantage and need to do something with it. Because at this point right now, like, you don't know if Scherzer is going to be gone. You don't know if Adolis Garcia is going to be gone for the rest of the series. That's just pure speculation. For all we know, Adolis could be back in the lineup as early as tomorrow. And because we don't always saw with it. Again, I don't know if there's any official word that has come out at the time of recording this. But all that we saw was that he hit a fly ball to center field, and as soon as he was done with the follow-through of his swing, he was grabbing the left side of his lower back. And that could mean any number of things. We don't know how serious it is. We don't know exactly what the injury is. It is purely just speculation right now. And if it's bad, if it is bad, then this gives Arizona a huge window to work with. Because, right, like we said, we saw everything that Adolis was doing. And Adolis is one of the main reasons, if not probably the biggest reason, why Texas is here right now, right alongside Corey Seager. Like, on the offensive side of things, those two have been doing the majority of the damage. So, when you get rid of one of those, don't get me wrong, Corey Seager is great. But Arizona has been showing they can put up runs when it matters.
So, I don't want to be a wet blanket here, but I'm not as concerned as you might think, losing one of your starters and losing your 1B option offensively. Texas has a very deep lineup. Even the guys that aren't producing, the Josh Youngs, the Jonah Himes, and Nathaniel Lowe's of the world, they're batting like 6, 7, 8, right? So you have Marcus Semien, who had a huge RBI today, finally got off his little schneid. Corey Seager's been excellent, of course. Evan Carter was the fourth youngest player ever to hit cleanup in a World Series game, behind Miguel Cabrera, Ty Cobb, and Juan Soto. That's one heck of a list, with a Hall of Famer, a future Hall of Famer, Juan Soto probably one day, and then Evan Carter.
Probably, at this rate.
So I'm not as concerned. I think the depth is still there. You're just going to need someone else to step up, and I think they have the pieces that someone else can step up. And with the rotation, remember, they entered the playoffs without Max Scherzer, and Scherzer had not pitched particularly well in the playoffs, so they were covering those innings anyway. And it sort of reminds me of when the Braves lost Charlie Morton in game one of the 2021 World Series, that there's all this panic in Braves country of, how are we going to cover Charlie's innings? He's not going to pitch in game four. He's not going to pitch in game five. He can't pitch. And that's what great teams do. They cover these innings. John Gray comes in and locks the door. He was excellent today. Spores comes in, locks the door. A Chapman comes in and locks the door with minimal effort, I'll say. He merely closed the door. He did not.
Yeah, I was going
it.
To say he got an 114 mile per hour double play ball to get out of that inning.
Yeah, after giving great up a play run. By Seager, by the way.
Yeah,
and then of course Jose Leclerc comes in. So I think Texas has the arms to cover the innings. Three innings. What were you expecting out of Max Scherzer in Game 7? He hadn't pitched. He'd pitched three times in 2 months, and he's going to throw, 50 pitches, and maybe they're good pitches, maybe they're bad pitches in Game 7. Well, maybe you don't even need to go to a Game 7. So I know it's going to be tough tomorrow or today at this point to cover those innings, because you were going to use John Gray, but now you used him up today. But I think Texas can definitely cover the innings, can definitely cover the at-bats, and I'm not wavering in my support of Texas winning the series, even without Adelise or Scherzer.
Yeah, we'll say, I agree with you that Scherzer, I don't think is as big of a – losing him, I don't think is as big of a blow as it may seem. To your point, I mean, he struggled in ALCS Game 3. He wasn't particularly great in Game 7. And even today, I mean, the D-backs were making hard contact against him. I mean, he got some help from Garcia when he threw out Walker trying to score on Tommy Pham's single. Losing Garcia, it would hurt, I think, for sure. I mean, I guess you go from having a great 1-9 to having a great 1-8, maybe. I mean, with all due respect to Travis Jankowski, who's he's a pretty fast runner and a solid defender, he doesn't quite have the same thumb as Garcia. But
I agree, but I think you kind of just adjust the strategy, and yeah, who better to adjust the strategy of a World Series game than a manager that's won three of them, you know?
Yeah.
So I do think
he's been in the World Series quite a few times.
Out.
Yeah.
That helps out there. And also Mets legend Jankowski, you know, that's just going to be a different, let's say you plug him in the nine hole.
That's probably where he gets,
a quote unquote secondary leadoff guy that Semien and Seager can drive in. And I know if he's on base, he's a threat to steal a base. He's a threat to take the extra base on a single or a double. And I think there's just a sort of a new fold, and I don't think this is going to prevent the Rangers from winning the series or prevent Bruce Bochy from putting on a masterclass here.
Yeah, no, I think also, I mean, with Garcia has been hitting third this series. I mean, he can just move Evan Carter back up to the three spot. I mean, he's proven he's more than comfortable hitting under the bright lights, especially in the middle of the lineup. And I'm assuming he's going to be hitting, you know, third or fourth or second probably for most of his career. So, by the way, I've been super impressed by that guy. I mean, he literally was not legal drinking age in the United States until this August. And now he's, you know, tearing the cover off the ball in the playoffs. So,
he's legitimately right now one of the most interesting players in this postseason. I mean, we're watching him right now. He doesn't look like a rookie. He looks like a guy who's been here for a long while, but has the ability of someone that has the ability of a rookie that still is trying. People are still trying to figure him out too. Like, his game is very good. When you have good bat to ball skills, like he has great defense and great speed, that makes it extremely hard for any pitcher to truly work around you, especially when you not only can put the bat on the ball for a quick slap single, but also, you know, put the ball over the fence a good chunk of times too. Like, he's got pop in that bat. You can't just throw it high and hope he just, you know, pops out. No, you throw it high to him and he's going to put it about 20 rows back.
And he's got excellent plate discipline. I mean,
they call him Carter for a reason.
Yeah, he doesn't chase. I mean, it's crazy, really. I mean, it feels like he doesn't overswing necessarily either.
So, question. Heading into the 2024 season, American League Rookie of the Year, Evan Carter or the field?
I mean, who would the field be? That's the thing.
That is what I was asking on Twitter the other day. Of course, we don't know where the likes of Yamamoto are going to go.
Yeah, Yamamoto. So maybe
he's on the Red Sox and that throws a wrench into it. Or,
but I mean, that's the crazy thing, though, is that Carter is going to have rookie eligibility next year.
Very, very 2021 Randy Arozarena.
I was going to say, yeah, Arozarena. I mean, then again, I remember thinking Sixto Sanchez was going to be a strong rookie of the year candidate. Which, by the way, Sixto still has rookie status because he hasn't pitched in 3 years.
That still blows my mind.
Evan Carter.
I mean, I feel like I'd probably have Carter because, like, I mean, we don't know where Yamamoto is going to be. And then, you know, there's Imanaga who's going to be coming over too, probably. I mean, there's – we don't know which prospects are going to debut next year. I think – Junior Caminero, I think, will be in the majors for the Rays. Mm-hmm. Maybe you see Drew Thorpe for the Yankees at some point.
But Jace Young with the Tigers.
Jace Young with the Tigers, which I believe that's Josh Young's younger brother.
Checks
out. Yeah, I mean, they were both infielders who played for Texas Tech. Also, that's crazy. So, yeah, that's where we're at in the World Series. Any other final thoughts before we move on?
I want to give a shout out to Brandon Fott. He really lived up to his name and fought through the outing today. I thought he was excellent. He had made one mistake, quote unquote, to Corey Seager. It's freaking Corey Seager in October. Like, come on, what are you doing here? Seager tied for the second most home runs by a shortstop in playoff history behind one Derek Jeter. He's played less than half as many games as Jeter, by the way. Very eerily similar numbers to Reggie Jackson in the playoffs. 18 home runs in 76 games for Seager, 18 home runs in 77 games for Reggie Jackson. So that's bonkers right there.
Mr. October, maybe. I don't know.
Mr. The new October. Shout out to Bob Nightingale.
Yeah.
But yeah, I thought Mr. Brandon Fott, he pitched, I've said this before, like an ace. He didn't necessarily have ace stuff, but just enough to get through, you know, 5 1/3 innings, just enough to help out the Diamondbacks bullpen. I know they lost. I get it. But those kind of innings that in this three games in 3 days, those are going to be critical outs that you don't need Castro to cover. You don't need Seawald to cover. You don't need Ginkle to cover. You don't need your high leverage guys to cover because your starter goes out and covers it. So I know the Diamondbacks lost. I know Fott allowed the big home run to Seager. I get it, but I thought he was excellent tonight.
Yeah, I think right now when it comes to
that's the thing,
this,
though. Go ahead, Alex.
Yeah, when it comes to this series right now, like I said earlier, I think it's really going to come down to that first game. If the series turns into like a 5 or 6 game series, and then I don't think it will as much. But if we're getting down to game 7, that first game is going to loom very, very large. And I also think that if Adolis is out for the rest of the series, that will put a big damper on Texas, because now you not only do you lose one of your best hitters, but now everyone else has to bat up. That's one of the things that I always find weird whenever you're talking about, you know, trading a player or trying to add on another player. Is that not only does getting a good guy, let's say like in football, like a wide receiver, right? Not only does getting a great receiver mean that you now have a number two, but your number two now becomes a number three, and then your number three that becomes a four, and you're just your skill at every level gets stronger. But it works in the inverse as well. If you lose that player, the other players have to step up, and if they can't step up to that challenge, then that's when you start to really see some collapses. That's why whenever you lose a big-time player, a lot of times teams have trouble recovering, because it's not that they just lost that production. They lost that production and that spot, because everyone else that worked well in their current spots has to play above it.
I mean, I've seen that a lot.
I will say this is a team that started Robbie Grossman batting third.
Oh, yeah.
In the Tampa series. So, baseball's a weird sport, man.
Baseball's a great sport.
Odd. Also, shout out to Jace Peterson getting that playoff at bat.
Yeah.
On base, Jace, baby.
Yes. Shout oh, my shout gosh. Out Tommy beautiful. Pham, baby. Shout out to Tommy Pham. What a legend.
I love Tommy Pham. I'm so happy that he's in the playoffs and doing well right now in the World Series. because it's crazy because he's been on a lot of good teams, and this is the first time he advanced past the LDS. So good for him, really. And no, I think, you know, it's pretty big that the D-backs have not had to use really their big arms these last two games. You know, Paul Sewald and Kevin Ginkle feels like, I mean, they've been pitching almost every game through game one of the World Series, and now they've had a couple games to rest, so I'm sure they're going to be all systems go in games 4 and 5, and, you know, you get an off day after game 5 if you make it that far, and then you got, you know, they're going to need them as much as possible those if it does end up back in Texas. So anyways, we're going to move on to rant roulette. So I'm going to throw it over to Alex, who has all the props. So Alex, go ahead.
All right, guys. Welcome back to Rant Roulette. Here we have a whole bunch of topics here every week. One of us gets a topic that does not have to be about baseball, but it absolutely could be. We have all these topics that each of us submit to every single week. So we constantly have a full regulating system of questions that can be asked. And to give some ideas, we've talked about who would be the best pitcher for Game 7. We've also talked about the best way to make a bacon, egg, and cheese. So again, it can be anything. So we're going to start this off here again. I have my randomizer. It is all set up. I have a dice as well. If it is 1 or 2, I will go first. If it is 3 or 4, Mac will go first. If it's 5 or 6, Splash will go first. The roll is a 1. So that means it's me going first. And my question will be, who will be the 2026 MVP? So try to look a little bit forward into the future.
Yeah.
Here on this one. Here, I wanted to make sure that it wasn't just, you know, some of the guys that are always constantly in the video. This is one of my questions, so of course I get it. But for me, honestly, I could easily go with the homer pick, and I think I'm going to. Julio Rodriguez has shown amazing growth just from year 1 to year 2 even. And I think that growth could get even stronger and even bigger from there. So I think Julio is a very strong candidate for being the MVP in 2026. I also want to give some ideas again to guys like Corbin Carroll. Evan Carter's one that I think could very well definitely be in that look as well here. But, and you know what? I want to throw a pitcher in there. I'm going to keep in Seattle. George Kirby is just so darn good. But I'm also going to throw some love to Adley Rutschman. Rutschman as a good young catcher, that's always a good pick, I think, for going in the future. Remember, 2026, not next season, not the season after that, but the season after that. So, still a ways to go. What do you guys think? I think Julio is a fairly safe pick overall.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
You can go Acuna, you can go Soto. You know, they're still going to be 27, 28 in that year, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
We don't know what team Soto will be on by then, by the way.
That's a good point. Hopefully he doesn't go to the Mets, so he has good offensive production. Soto in Colorado or in New York.
Oh my god!
At Yankee Stadium, he's going to hit 70 porch. Home runs. I promise.
Oh my god!
Yes, that is the easiest. If you're Brian Cashman, what are we doing here? Just trade for him. Trade the. Maybe not Dominguez because he's hurt right now, but trade everyone.
I don't
everyone.
Know if you would trade Drew Thorpe. I mean, that's
trade for Juan Soto and sign Juan Soto. I don't know why. I'm not even a Yankees fan. How difficult is it to load your lineup with left-handed hitters? You play 81 games a year with the shortest. I actually Fenway might be shorter because of the pesky pole, but in theory, the easiest place to hit a home run in Major League Baseball. You play there 81 times a year. Why are you not loading up on left-handed hitters? Now, I get it. Judge is Judge. Fine. Torres is Torres. He's great. But what are we doing? Why aren't we going after the Seegers of the world, the Freddie Freemans of the world, Matt Olsons of the world? I don't know. Anthony Rizzo seems to be doing pretty well for himself.
Yeah, I'd say so. I will throw another name out there. Gunnar Henderson, I think, will definitely have a shot.
Yes.
And then if I'm sticking with the Orioles for a second, Jackson Holliday, probably. I mean, by that point, I expect him to be in the majors this coming year, now that I think about it. And I mean, I think Julio, though, has a strong chance to win. Who knows? He might win multiple by 2026. I mean, he's a true five-tool talent, really. But I'd be curious about, you know, catchers don't win MVP all that often. Buster
Posey surprises me, honestly.
Yeah, so Buster Posey is the last one. It's
some of that's the game's played issues. Like, if you're it's a catcher, that, you're gonna you need to make up like 30 to 40 games a year of production, unless you're like an outlier catcher. And those outlier catchers, like even Real Muto every year, as good as Real Muto generally, not this year, generally is with the glove, and you know he does everything right, and he plays 140 games, but he's going to be a 115 OPS plus guy in his best seasons. That's not going to win MVP, even if you're like. Buster Posey had to win the batting title and have the best OPS plus in the NL. Mauer had to hit 360. So it's really tough for catchers because you're already at that offensive disadvantage because you're not going to play 155, 160 games. Like Acuña played 159 games this year. Ohtani's an outlier, but generally your MVP is going to play 150 plus games a year.
So, okay, here's my thing. I mean, this is again why I hate the term most valuable player. I think that overall, value-wise, a great catcher is going to be better than a lot of other positions, regardless of how many hits you have. And it's going to be because of what they do.
That's factored into war. It's just a matter of, would you rather have a great catcher for 130 games or a great shortstop for 150, 155 games?
I would rather have a great catcher for 130 games.
Okay.
Or I would rather take the catcher because at that point right now, a great catcher not only is going to have good offensive numbers if they are good with it, they're going to be good defensively, they're also going to be able to work a pitching staff a lot better than a shortstop is going to be able to. And being able to control a pitching staff, like this is the argument we keep talking about when we have when we keep bringing up Cal Raleigh and Adley Rutschman, is their ability to be able to work a pitcher, being able to calm them down whenever they need to, know the strengths and weaknesses, is going to make that pitcher even better. Like, there's a reason why a lot of the best pitchers in baseball have a great catcher right next to them, or why that great catcher is always like the first person that is talked about if a pitcher wins a Cy Young, is because they have that exact amount of trust with them, but they also know that pitcher that catcher is going to use them to their absolute value.
Okay, question. Would you rather have Adley Rutschman or Francisco Lindor one season?
Adley.
Oh my god. For Sorry, one Mac. Season?
Yeah.
I'll give you
125 games from Adley, an average catcher behind him, and 155. We'll give 160 games for Lindor.
Actually, no, I will go with Lindor on that because I think that Adley still needs some time to mature. I don't think that he's as good at working with pitchers. I think that him just as an offensive threat and as a defensive threat is very good. I don't think he has I don't want to say maturity because that's not correct either, but I don't think he has the ability to work with a pitcher as well as say like a guy like Cal Raleigh does. And so at that point, now you are just looking purely at the offensive and defensive statistics. Whereas at that point, then you're obviously going to be, you're going to take Lindor, but you get a guy that can do both of those things. And that just added an insurmountable amount of value to that player. Something that that's a little hard to try and actually put into a full statistical bit there, which is, again, that's hard to quantify, but.
Because it's tough with catchers because when you think of a star catcher, it comes with a lower level of offensive production. So, or even Lindor at shortstop, same issue, right? So if you're comparing like Lindor to, you know, Freddie Freeman, obviously Freeman's the better offensive player, but if you're comparing them like apples to apples, like who's more valuable, you could argue Lindor is more valuable playing elite defense at shortstop as opposed to middling defense at first base, respectfully. So I think that's the tough thing with like Adley winning MVP. I don't hate the shout. It's just that's why catchers don't really win MVP. It's just the games played and the general lack of offensive production.
I was going to say, I mean, that's why like Yadier Molina.
Offensive volume.
You know, at Yadier Molina for his career is like, you know, by OPS plus and WRC plus, he's a below average offensive player. But like for a catcher, I mean, hey, he played 20 seasons all at catcher. Like, offensive numbers, like, he was so, like, amazing defensively that, I mean, yeah, he can be a league average, slightly below league average offensive catcher, I mean, but...
He's a Hall of Famer, probably a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, he's a Hall of Famer. I mean, begrudgingly, I mean, for the longest time, I was not on the Yadi Hall of Fame train, but now at this point, it's like, oh, yeah, I mean, he stuck around for that long for one team. You know,
can we put Brian McCann in the Hall of Fame?
Oh my God!
Come on! The F wars are very close, and one of them.
I know that's the thing. F war will tell you that.
That's what I'm saying overall with this. This is going to get another reason why I hate the term most valuable player, because when you look at value, having that catcher that can do that ability is something that adds. You can't quantify that amount of value, and it's a huge amount of value.
It's the Maldonado thing.
Exactly. Maldonado is also the Ohtani thing.
Ohtani's going to win MVP in 2026 on the Mets. So,
exactly.
No, it's on the Mariners. We already know that's happening.
I'm pretty sure it's on the Savannah Bananas. I don't know. True.
All right. Let's move on to our next topic here. So, it's going to be between Mac or Splash Mac. You have 1-3, Splash 5, 4-6. It is 5. So, Splash, your random topic here is, what is the best dipping sauce?
Chick-fil-A sauce. Next question.
Incorrect.
No, I am correct. No, we're done. Segment over. Go ahead, Mac.
The reason I'm interjecting here is because if we're going like universal, like every restaurant has it, it's barbecue sauce, in my opinion. That's the thing. Chick-fil-A sauce is only available at Chick-fil-A and Target.
Do not reach my levels of degeneracy. I actually don't do this, but I would, in theory, bring my bottle of Chick-fil-A sauce I bought at the grocery store to these places.
I used to have one too.
Or get takeout. My grandmother tried to bring General Tso's sauce or something like that. She tried to bring it to a restaurant and we had to like physically remove the bottle. It's like, we're not doing this. But the answer is Chick-fil-A sauce now and forever. I put it on everything that moves.
For my own personal reasons, I refuse to have anything when it comes to Chick-fil-A, but that's we're not talking
that's
about
fine.
That today.
That's fine. Just, that's but fine. It's the ingredients to it. It's
I
like,
will, I'll
it's like
talk
honey
about,
mustard and barbecue sauce like crossed.
I'll talk about my favorite dipping sauce, and it's one that I will never get to probably use again. And I'm probably cheating on this, but whatever, it's fine. There is at Red Robin's for a while they had these like chocolate truffle sticks with like the sea salt on them, and they came with like a warmed extra sweetened chocolate dipping sauce with them that was absolutely perfect. And so it's a bit cheating, I guess, because it's not something you can put on a lot of things, but it's something that you dip in and you have, and absolutely delightful.
Also, shout out to Mambo Sauce. Those in the DMV, you already know.
All right, Mac, it is your turn. And question submitted by Splash here. What is the biggest I'm him performance in MLB history?
Oh, my God. Oh, give me a moment on that, because there's... honestly, if I'm talking about like in our lifetime, I'm gonna go with Madison Bumgarner in Game 7 of the World Series in 2014, because that was, I mean, first of all, that postseason as a whole was absolutely ridiculous from him. I mean, that complete game shutout in the wild card game, he dominated the Cardinals in the NLCS. He lost one game. He didn't even pitch that badly in that game against the Nationals. But then, you know, strong in Game 1 of the World Series, complete game shutout in Game 5, and then they come out on 2 days rest and close out that series. I mean, that was absurd. Might be the greatest World Series pitching performance we've ever seen. I mean, the dude was unstoppable, so I feel like I have to give it to that.
Okay, I'll give you a splash dollar if you can guess what made me think of this. What individual play in baseball history made me think of this? Mac, you probably have a better shot than Alex just because of what the topic is.
What? Yes. Is it from like this postseason?
No. One of two moments. I'll give you two moments.
One of two moments?
Yes.
Man, that's a.
It's very specific, Mac. Mac has definitely seen it. It's like
I've
an iconic moment, a very iconic moment.
Kirk Gibson.
Not that far back.
Oh, okay. It was in our lifetimes, or
yes, yes.
I'm lost, man. That's...
Okay, we are going to put some respect on Andy Chavez, the greatest defensive play in the history of baseball. Just, yes. That is the, like, I'm him. You have the classic picture with the sign, the advertisement at Shea. It's AIG, art.
Yeah.
Then he doubles off Scott Rolen. It's picture perfect. Also would have accepted Maglio Ordóñez's walk-off home run to send the Tigers to the World Series.
Somewhere above my desk, I have the Andy Chavez bobblehead they gave out at Shea where it's him leaping up over the AIG sign. So, yeah, I get where you're coming from.
So I got two quick ones. One's a homer one, one's not. The homer one, because I want to, and I don't care what any of you guys say on this one, is Kyle Raleigh hitting the walk-off home run of Domingo Acevedo off of the Hitty Here Cafe.
The double?
Yeah, that Edgar double, yeah, 100%. But the other one I'm going to bring up here, not a homer one, and it's just because this story is so outlandish, I can't believe it's still true, and that's Ray Caldwell, pitcher for Cleveland here, that in 1919 pitched 8 2/3 innings and then was struck by lightning and came in, and after a short break came in and finished the rest of the game. Like
the 1910,
it's just ridiculous.
You were struck by lightning. You had lightning rain down from the sky and strike you right in the head. And
not even God wanted him to finish that game.
Yeah,
and you know what he said right there? He said, "I don't care if you don't want me to finish." To quote The Rock, it
Alex,
doesn't
you win.
Matter if you don't want me to finish.
Oh, you win. Exactly. That was art.
Yeah, wow. That's goodness. that might take the cake there.
That was beautiful. That's up there with like Doc Ellis throwing a no-hitter on LSD.
When Splash sent me the prompt for this, the two moments I immediately thought of were Ray Caldwell pitching after getting struck by lightning and the Doc Ellis no-hitter on LSD. So I'm glad you brought that one up as well.
Pittsburgh Parrot.
Definitely. But that's it here for Rant Roulette. Let us know what kind of topics you would like to see. Who knows? Very well, they might be able to find their way into our randomized
list. That's a good idea. We should have a listener at Rant Roulette. Yes. Yeah. Each of us submit one, and we get a listener to submit one.
That would be fun to do as well. I would love to have anybody list and all of our listeners on our podcast, whether they thread this on Twitter or wherever you're seeing this at, go ahead and give us ideas. DM them to us. Put it on Twitter anywhere you can. We would love to have your guys' ideas put in with us.
Yes, 100%.
They can be baseball or not baseball.
Stuff, yeah.
Doesn't have to be about baseball. We will ask that it is, you know, podcast appropriate.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, are your thoughts on the war?
Not so with that, is now time for trivia here? So I'm handing it back to Matt.
F-War.
Yeah.
F-War.
R-War.
The B-War.
Warp.
Warp, yes.
Yes.
So it is trivia time, and I am hosting this week, and I'm going to be running back an old trivia segment I was inspired by Inside the NBA this past week, because they did their annual version of Who He Played For. So I'm running back my version of this, you know, the one where I ask a player and a team, you have to tell me if they actually played for that team. So, So we've done this a couple times. I believe the last one we did ended in a tie, but I have 11 players here. We have done that before too. Really good at this brand of trivia. So you guys, I have a number in my head between 1 and 15. You guys both guess a number.
8.
And this is how we're going to decide who's going. What'd you say?
9.
Alex?
I said 8.
Oh, 8. The correct answer was 12. So, Splash, you're going first. Or you can choose to go first.
Let's go first. I will receive the kickoff.
All right. So, your first player is Ichiro. Did he play for the Miami Marlins?
Yes. He pitched for the Miami Marlins, actually.
Yes, he did.
Yes, he did.
All right, yeah,
a beautiful,
perfect.
Beautiful day that was.
And so had his 3,000th hit on a triple.
Yes, against the Rockies.
Yes.
Yes, sir.
At Coors Field.
Is he eligible for this Hall of Fame or is it next year?
I believe. Oh, no, it's next year. This year is like
Adrian. He came back and played like six games or six innings with the Mariners.
Yeah. In the Tokyo series.
That's right.
Brief question away from the trivia. Is Ichiro a unanimous Hall of Famer?
Unanimous? I hate
the unanimous questions.
But first ballot.
I hate it too. Because he's obviously first ballot. Yeah. But Mo was the first one to be full unanimous. It should have been Griffey, but it was Mo.
With all due respect to Ken Griffey Jr., there are a lot of players that it should have. We are talking about Babe Ruth.
Babe Ruth
wasn't even
somehow
number one in his own ballot.
neither was Willie Mays.
Okay, I need voters to justify these. How do you do that?
Blows my mind really is that one of the three voters who didn't vote for Griffey voted for David Eckstein.
What are we doing here? What are we doing? And if your logic is, well, no one deserves it on the first ballot, that is the dumbest logic I've ever
that's
heard.
The worst.
The player is either Hall of Fame.
That's
or
not
or
logic. That's not logic. That's bias.
Like, what are we doing? What are we doing here? Adrian. Let's break down Adrian Beltre. Maybe you don't think he's a Hall of Famer. Maybe you only reserve it for like if you're Mike Schmidt at third base. Okay, whatever. Fine. Explain to me why Mike Schmidt wasn't wasn't unanimous. Why wasn't Randy Johnson unanimous? Greg Maddux unanimous? Derek Jeter was one vote short. We can poke holes in Derek Jeter. Fine. Cal Ripken wasn't unanimous. Pick your favorite player other than Mariano Rivera. They were not unanimous for some unknown reason. I understand. Oh, my goodness. There's nothing that gets me more heated than the unanimous Hall of Fame stuff.
I mean,
you should have seen my reaction. If you're listening to the podcast, I was having a seizure about 2 minutes ago.
Ken confirmed Splash was shaking uncontrollably. And my phone was in my hand, ready to call 911.
Yes. Yeah. How was Chipper Jones not unanimous?
Yeah, that one's.
What do we?
That one's.
Tom Seaver wasn't unanimous here.
My dad thought Seaver was going to be, but he was short.
He was close.
So,
he had the record
anyways,
for a while. No.
Splash is on the board here.
My beautiful plan worked to rile Splash up for in the middle of trivia.
Yeah. We're sticking with a somewhat recent player. Alex, your first player is Jose Bautista. Did he play for the Philadelphia Phillies?
Oh, wait a minute. I'm going to say no, he did not.
Oh, you are incorrect.
I think that's his baseball reference photo, right?
Is it really?
Yeah. So
I think so.
In 2018, Jose Bautista played for three of the five NL East teams. The Braves, the Mets, and then the Mets traded him to the Phillies.
Pirates
so
legend.
That is your first strike.
Yeah,
Devil Rays legend?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, that's right. Orioles legend, too.
Yes.
All right, so Splash, your next player is Mark McGwire. Did he play for the Chicago Cubs?
I'm going to say no. I think he only played with Oakland and St. Louis.
Yeah, you're correct. He did not play for the Chicago Cubs. So you're up 2-0 with no strikes.
How is Frank Thomas not unanimous Hall of Famer?
Back on that. Anyway, Alex, we're sticking with first baseman named Mark. Your player is Mark Teixeira. Did he play for the Los Angeles Angels?
Oh, crap. I'm trying to remember where he went to after. I'm going to say no again.
Oh,
this is the Mike Trout pick. This is the Mike Trout pick.
Oh, you're right. Yeah, no, he was drafted. Oh, my God, you're right.
Wow.
Also, Braves legend.
Braves legend, and then the Braves traded him to the Angels in the summer of 2008.
And he was unbelievable. He received MVP votes that year.
He was nasty down the stretch for the Angels. And then he decided, you know what? Forget that 8-year contract. I'm signing with the Yankees. And instead, the Angels ended up with compensation pick, which they used to take Mike Trout. So, wow, Alex is 0-2 to start. So, Splash, your next player is Tom Seaver. Did he play for the Boston Red Sox?
Ooh. Okay, I know, obviously he was a Met. How is this dude not a unanimous Hall of Famer?
All right, Slash, come on.
Obviously a Met, obviously a Red. I think he did play with the Red Sox, and correct me if I'm wrong, but wasn't he on the 86? He wasn't on the World Series roster, but he was on the team, the Red Sox in 86, yes?
That is correct. He finished his career at the Red Sox. He got hurt, and he was not on the World Series roster. But yes, right. He was on the 1986 right. Red Sox. Okay. So, all right, Splash is batting 1,000 right now. Alex, your next player is Pedro Martinez. Did he play for the Dodgers?
Yes. Yes, he did.
Correct. He started his career there.
I remember. Say the line. Say the line.
No,
you do it. I'm not. How was he not line.
Unanimous?
Anyway, next up for Splash, Trevor Hoffman. Did he play for the Giants?
No, I think just Padres and Brewers.
You're half credit there, but you said yes, you're correct. He did not play for the Giants, but he also debuted with the Marlins. So he got traded for Gary Sheffield, if you wouldn't believe it.
Oh wow.
So wow, you're still batting 1,000 though. Let's go back to Alex. Ivan Pudge Rodriguez. Did he play for the Baltimore Orioles?
Yes, he did.
You are incorrect, sir.
I just thought he played for a ton of teams. I'm like, yeah. All right, Baltimore's probably one of them.
He played for the Rangers.
Seven teams?
Rangers, Marlins, Tigers, Astros, Nationals,
Rangers again,
and the Yankees, actually, back in 2008.
When I answered the question, for some reason, I mixed up Pudge and Vladdy Sr., who I know was an Oriole at the end. Yeah. So
Splash has pretty much secured this. So, but
an obligatory line. I'm not going to say it again.
Well, Splash here. I'll just to seal it. Steve Carlton, did he play for the Montreal Expos?
Ooh. I don't believe so. I'm going to say no.
Yeah, you're correct. I've gotten that wrong before, but Steve Carlton did not play for the Expos.
He was on the 87 Twins. He was in the World Series picture.
Yeah, he played for the Twins. He played for the Blue Jays. He played for the Giants a little bit, the White Sox. He began his career with the Cardinals, which I always think he was a Philly, just like, I mean, I don't really.
He was like, he won 27 games. The Phillies,
the team won like 57. They were awful.
Shout out to the Phillies, by the way. They had one playoff win before 1975.
That's pretty good. Do you guys want to just finish these last two outs?
Yeah, why not? Yeah, let's do it. Yeah,
all right. So here, I'll throw this one back to Alex. Evan Longoria, did he play for the Giants?
Yes.
Yeah, all right. Good.
Very recent. That was very recent.
I mean, yeah, he was on the Giants last year, but I mean, he's in the World Series. He's made the World Series with the two other teams he's played for.
Which I find hilarious, so that it took him how long in between 15, World Series?
15 years.
Yeah.
MLB Power Pros Legend.
MLB Power Pros Legend. So, John Boy Media actually put on MLB Power Pros Media?
Yes, they did.
I haven't watched it. I need to watch it. I'm flabbergasted. I'm speckledorfed. That's amazing.
And the last player we had, I guess you guys already answered this, was Vladimir Guerrero. Did he play for the Orioles?
Yes.
No, he didn't. What are you talking about? No, he didn't.
He got a single on a ball that bounced.
Yep. That was one of the greatest things I've seen.
Vladimir Guerrero dude was just amazing.
I just remember back, like, there was an All-Star game. I don't remember when it was. It was still when Vladdy Sr. was playing, and he actually got invited to the All-Star game. And they made the joke about, where is he going to swing? He's going to swing on his head, his shoulders, knees and toes, his head, his shoulders, knees and toes.
He's going to make contact and hit 300 for his
career. Exactly. And they showed a video of him, not only just, like, every time they said head, shoulders, knees and toes, they showed a different clip of him swinging.
Art. This is cinema. Shout out to Martin Scorsese.
Beautiful.
So, anyway, Splash comes away with the victory here.
GG's. Alex, I appreciate it. Hopefully, I will come away with another victory Sunday afternoon.
The problem is that's in an area where I actually matter, as opposed to me trying to do trivia against you. You're better than me at trivia. That's true. The problem is, my football team is better than yours.
I don't think that's been true the last, like, 5 years.
Well, too bad. The problem is, it's still true right
now.
No,
it hasn't been true for five years.
You say that, but the problem is, I'm looking at the stat sheets, and you see here, it's true. So, anyway.
What stat sheet are you looking at? Is it brought to you by?
Look at my stat sheet. You see, here's a clipboard. I got a clipper right here.
Okay.
See? That's yeah, okay. It's telling,
that's
think.
What you said the last time. That's what you said the last time. And Baltimore walked in and did a fourth and two on your noggin.
That's when we had no secondary. Now we have a full secondary to work with.
Are you, well, okay. I guess you did just get Leonard Williams. I was going to say run.
Yeah,
run
yeah, but Leonard that's a, Williams is
yeah,
here
but
now.
Yeah, we have Leonard Williams and Frank Clark Sr. now, too. Let's go.
Listen, it's Geno Smith. It's gonna be a Geno to Geno interception. It's all over.
Shout out to
that Geno to Geno interception is going to hit. That's gonna feed families. That's going to solve world hunger right there.
There was Geno to Geno. I will say
almost as good as the Lamar Jackson to Lamar Jackson, but the Jets didn't activate him that game.
There was, I remember years ago, one of my favorite things was there's some defensive tackle the Seahawks had, last name Hill, and they went up against another Hill that was the quarterback of the St. Louis Rams. Yeah, Sean Hill thing. Yeah. And he threw an interception right to him, and it was like, damn, that Hill to Hill connection, though.
Yeah, it reminds me of when Brian Anderson hit a home run off of Ian Anderson, and I wanted to off myself, but that was
Anderson.
Yeah.
What about Josh Allen?
We're not going to talk about the Will Smith play. Also, shout out to future 3-time World Series champion Will Smith, I guess.
On three different teams.
Yes.
The problem is it's only going to be 2 times, though, because the Diamondbacks are still going to win, but, you know.
I don't know about that one, Chief.
I mean, I know you don't, but the problem is the Ravens are better than the Seahawks.
I remember watching Chris Young face off against Chris Young.
That was a good one.
That was fun,
one of those people named Chris Young is not 6'10" though.
Chris Young was like Chris Tiger.
Princeton Tigers basketball legend Chris Young.
We have gotten so far off the rails. Let's go to the road ourselves.
Yeah. So anyway,
I'd like to go first here.
All right, go for it.
So, yeah, this is the moment to ourselves, you know, 60 seconds, give or take a few, talk about whatever's on your mind. So, Splash, you are up. Your time starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, the Philadelphia Phillies, their fans, their organization is and will always be fraudulent. This isn't about them beating the Braves. I made $2,300 on that. I don't really care. Back at it next year. But the Philadelphia Phillies cost me about $600 last week. If they had won the series in 5, I would be up $3,000. If they won the series in 6, I would have been up $300. Annoying, but, you know, fine. If they had just won game 7, I went out and got $350 from my bank account to throw on the Phillies to win game 7. You know what? They're going to win. They're not going to lose back-to-back games at home. They're like 28-11 at Citizens Bank Park in the playoffs. This is good. We're good. They're going to beat the Diamondbacks. We're fine. Brandon Pfaadt is on the mound. What are we doing here? You have Bryce Harper. You have Kyle Schwarber. You have Nick Castellanos. You have Bryson Stott. You have JT Realmuto. What are we doing here? And no, they lose. They lose game 6 at home. They lose game 7 at home. They cost me a solid $600. And I am not going to get over that. I understand you made me a lot of money. You made me a lot of money about 2 weeks ago, $2,300 when they beat the Braves in 4. Thanks for that. You know, I got my Ravens jerseys. I'll show them on the next podcast. But brother in Christ, what are we doing? Why are we losing back-to-back games to the Diamondbacks? Why are you I'm going to say we because I made the bet on this stupid team. Why are you losing back-to-back games to the Diamondbacks? What are we doing? At home, by the way, you told me you were unstoppable at home. You told me you weren't going to lose to an NL team at home. I know you lost to Houston last year. They're not an NL team. You beat the Braves. You beat the Padres. You beat the Braves again. You beat the Marlins. Why can't you beat the Diamondbacks? You had 2 chances. What are we doing? Okay, that's it.
Because the Diamondbacks are good, that's why.
Yeah, they're unstoppable. They brought in Paul Sewald. That's all they needed.
It's time for Paul Sewald to pitch.
How do you blow a 3-2 lead at home? I understand the Braves blew a 3-1 lead. That was at a neutral site, and they didn't have home field advantage that series.
Yeah,
why are you blowing a 3-2 lead?
What are we doing here? I can tell you exactly why. It's because the Phillies don't have someone named Paul Sewald in their
team. Yeah, that's the thing. They don't have
they didn't have Paul Sewald to pitch.
They blew a lead in Game 7. Bryce Harper had four hitless games in the last five games.
I will say also, Harper missed two fastballs down the middle in that last at-bat he had, which was... I was fully expecting him to hit the ball into the freaking Delaware water gap during that at-bat.
Also, shout out to Jake Cave for the final out of the series.
Final out.
What do we do? What's worse, Jake Cave getting the final out or Vaughn Grissom getting the final out? By the way, I have not watched that. I will not watch that. I was at work and I just checked my balance and saw $2,300 in my account. I wanted to off myself, but $2,300.
But you also
nice.
Got money. That's the thing.
Yes. I can gamble sometimes correctly. I'm positive largely because of that, but it's like a 50-50 shot, and the Phillies had way plus odds. Give me that all day long. But, bro, how do you blow a 3-2 lead?
Alex, do you want to go next, or should
sure,
I go
let's,
next?
Sure, right. Let's go next.
All right, I'll get going. God, wow.
look, this has been a very odd episode. This has been a very odd episode of Losses by Replacement.
all right, your time starts in 3, 2, 1, go.
All right, so last week during our Rant Roulette segment, I said something that pissed a lot of people off. And it was talking about the fact that I don't like eggs, which, you know what? That's fair. Guess what? It's time for me with another hot controversial take. Halloween is the most overrated holiday, in my opinion. Halloween, here's the thing. I don't know fully what I should love Halloween. I should, because there's a lot of candy involved, there's a lot of good treats involved, and, you know, a lot of times, there's other good things involved with it, too. I have personal stories about why I should love it, but I don't. And the reason mainly why is I don't like people wearing masks, I don't like people dressing up, I don't like going out and doing all that kind of stuff. I just get kind of annoyed by it, but also I just hate spooky things. I'm not a guy that likes that kind of stuff, so, you know what, judge before you will on that. But honestly, I think that overall, it is just, it's a little overrated in my opinion.
That's a fine take.
Honestly, that's not the
stuff,
worst take.
Like, what are we doing?
Obviously not the worst. Like, last week did that. But I know this is a very...
Yeah, I mean, I kind of get that. I mean, I feel like as I've aged, sort of like, I couldn't tell you the last time I actually, like, I probably stopped trick-or-treating when I was 13. Mm-hmm. But, I know that tomorrow, like, I'm going to... I'm busy during the day, so like I'm not going to be home at night. But I'll leave probably a bowl of candy outside my door for like the kids. But like
gonna super glue it to your table or to the floor or anything.
Maybe I should.
What you need to do is you gonna have the bowl of candy. You sit there like in like a little scarecrow costume or whatever, holding it out there just so you can scare kids that walk by trying to get candy.
Yes.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yes, that's a good idea.
Yeah, I don't know. I've never.
I don't know. What's your most underrated holiday?
Most underrated?
Drew, that's the correct answer.
No. Besides, you know, assuming we can't say that, you know, opening day, the holiday, I'll say Thanksgiving.
I love Thanksgiving.
I think Thanksgiving is a very underrated holiday.
Okay.
Thanksgiving question. July.
This was going to be my Rant Roulette in a couple weeks, but is mac and cheese a Thanksgiving food?
Yes, 100%.
Yes.
Okay, neither of you have ever been to the South, apparently.
I am okay with this.
I have been to the South.
I can always vibe with mac and cheese. That's just me. Apparently, it's not a Thanksgiving food.
I know that's controversial for some reason, but
yes.
Why is it controversial? Yeah. Mac and cheese is good.
I don't know. Just
you're already
add
eating
it,
that ton of food. Just add it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like, bro, you get sweet potatoes. You get like regular like scalloped potatoes. You get green bean casserole. You get the stuffing. Just mac and cheese. Mac and cheese.
Well, I feel like that's, that's normally, I feel like something, I think we made mac and cheese last year, the year, like, what?
I've never had it for Thanksgiving.
It's for, I think we did because, like, my nephew likes that type of stuff. I mean, that's,
I'm actually going to make pizza rolls for Thanksgiving, unironically.
That's actually a great idea.
I make, you get a piece of puff pastry. You lay down some sauce, you put pepperoni, you put cheese, you roll it up, or you slice it into pieces, you get skewers, you like snake it through the skewer, throw it in the oven or the air fryer. Excellent.
Welcome to Cooking Tips with Splash here. Yes. About replacement.
Instead of binging with Babish, it's succulents with Splash.
I was going to say splaining with Splash.
I like that too.
There you go.
That's going to be the new name of our podcast.
Please no.
Actually, but, that's okay. We can talk about this off air. But when we run a daily podcast and it's just me, it's going to be called Splaining with Splash. It's going to be that day's baseball stuff, just in Splash terms, you know?
So you mean fully incomprehensible to anybody else except you?
Yes. Like why Yamamoto isn't going to go to the Red Sox. It's because he was good friends with oh my goodness. It's like a former Yankee, like a washed out Yankee who was telling him like how baseball was in the America. And he's a former Yankee. So it's like, he's not okay. Yamamoto is not going to Boston. His best friend's a Yankees guy. There you go. It's as simple as that. 5 minutes. Podcast views going through the roof right there.
The problem is at that point that you're still going to have to pay me royalties. For using the name that I just gave, which we now have full record of now with this podcast going
that's
out.
Good point. did you guys see that?
Max still needs to do his moment to ourselves. Let's keep going.
More important. Respectfully, this is more important.
Yeah, incorrect. No,
the NFL has an issue with the Houston Cougars wearing Houston Oiler themed jerseys, but they don't have an issue with the Tennessee Titans wearing Houston Oiler themed jerseys. That's kind of funny to me. It's a color. It's the color scheme. What's wrong with it? Also, gorgeous uniforms. Screw the Titans, but gorgeous uniforms. Will Levis, mayo in your coffee, I'll pass on, but he was balling out yesterday.
I wish I never heard that, actually. Especially as a coffee consumer.
Not his worst food take. He eats bananas with the peel on.
Oh,
what?
Dude. All right, this dude needs to get his...
Hey, guess me not liking eggs isn't so bad now.
he min-maxed football stats and food takes. He's great at football, I guess. We'll see.
His food
but four of the
awful.
Worst food takes of all time.
Yeah.
It's like Alex.
Me not liking eggs is worse than someone who puts mayo in their coffee or eats bananas with the peel.
See, I don't like coffee anyway, so I don't really care.
Yeah.
I do like mayonnaise, though.
I'm the only coffee drinker here, I realize, so... anyways, I'm gonna get going my 60
seconds.
Please
do your moment
to
ourselves.
All right, ready? Here we go. So I just want to quickly shout out all the casuals who said that this World Series would be a dud. Clearly, you should just stick to other sports, because I think Game 1 of the series proved that this is going to go the distance. And yes, I will enjoy every single game that gets played. I also just want more baseball and. You know, I think we should all just be rooting for Game 7 above all. That's what I mean when I don't really have a rooting interest. I just want a Game 7. I want the season to go as long as possible. All right, let's put it that way. Yes, the first two rounds of the playoffs were kind of a dud. The LCS was both series, very fun watches. The World Series so far has been pretty fun to watch. You know, I just think, you know, just because, you know, it's not, you know, the Yankees and Astros facing each other in the LCS, and it's not – you know, the Dodgers and the Yankees in the World Series, whatever, two biggest market teams possible, doesn't mean it can't be fun to watch. Yeah, sure, the ratings weren't great in Game 1, but that doesn't mean it isn't a good series and it isn't good television. So if you're a casual, you think this series is boring, but I'll tell you right now, it's not. So that was our
moment.
That
was a W take.
If you're a casual, don't talk to me right now. I'll tell you that much. So that does it for our show today. Let us know what you think about this season as a whole, I guess, and also this World Series. I guess the next time we record might be after the series ends. Who knows? But anyways, let us know your thoughts and give us your rant roulette suggestions at LAR_baseball. Make sure to follow us there. Make sure to follow all of us on Twitter. Follow myself at Matthias_A_K. Follow Alex at TheSportsGuy242. And follow Splash at MrSplashman19. But for everyone at Lost Above Replacement, thank you for tuning in. and I hope to see you all real soon. Take care.